Democracy is not easy. It's hard.
Jesus. Tell me about it.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM, 5 days a week, blanketing planet Earth on Radio Sputnik. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow. Says me from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us for another thrilling action-packed adventure that we call the Bradcast. First, some breaking news. Transgender men and women will now be allowed to openly serve in the U.S. military. Secretary of Defense Ash Carter announced on Thursday this, the latest move in a series of historic shifts on gender policy for the nation's military. Carter said this is the right thing to do for our people and for the force. We're talking about talented Americans who are serving with distinction or who want the opportunity to serve. We can't allow barriers unrelated to a person's qualifications prevent us from recruiting and retaining those who can best accomplish the mission. Yeah, but where are they going to go to the bathroom? In a year, all the services will begin allowing transgender individuals to join the armed forces. Carter called for full implementation 1 year from now. The shift, says NBC News, marks a milestone for the administration, which under President Barack Obama has worked to make LGBT rights and equality a cornerstone of legacy on social change. And you know, and I'm reminded 1 year ago, just about exactly 1 year ago, when we were looking forward to the 4th of July Independence Day holiday, we were celebrating on this program. The Supreme Court had come in with their decision on marriage equality, allowing that in all 50 states across the land. Remember that, Desi Doyen?
That was a good day.
That was a good day. That was only 1 year ago.
I know.
Seems like forever ago. And not only did we have that decision a year ago, we had a number of other decisions that led me to do a series of shows suggesting my opinion that we were entering a new progressive age in this country. Remember that?
I do.
That also seems like a long time ago. But, you know, then when we see decisions like this from Ash Carter, when we see what the Supreme Court did just a few days ago concerning abortion and pushing back on this phony scheme that Republicans have been, carrying out in trying to shut down abortion clinics over lies that they are trying to improve women's safety. Supreme Court closed the door on that scheme just a few days ago. I am reminded, I think that with all the Sturm und Drang of the political season, of this crazy candidate known as Donald Trump, the fights between the corporatist Democrat Hillary Clinton and the very progressive Bernie Sanders, and all of the and everything going on with in Europe with Brexit and all of the terror attacks, it's easy to lose sight that, yes, with all of these various terrible things going on at various times, I believe we are still moving in that progressive direction.
I hope you're right.
I hope I am, too. Anyway, so there's some good news coming out of the Pentagon today. Coming up a little bit later. Speaking of some good news, our latest Green News report with Desi Doyen on this new pact between U.S., Canada, and Mexico for a new clean energy
partnership
agreement.
It's really very cool.
And Germany has banned fracking. So that and much more coming up in our latest Green News report. But first, a number of polls over the last week or two have shown Hillary Clinton, the presumptive Democratic nominee for president of the United States, anywhere from 5 to 12 points ahead of Donald Trump nationally, with Clinton leading, though more narrowly, much more narrowly, as I've shown, in the bulk of the key swing states that are being surveyed by the various pollsters. On yesterday's program, we talked about a new Quinnipiac poll that was out on Wednesday showing Clinton with pretty much neck and neck. She had a slight lead, just 2 points over Donald Trump nationally. That's in a head-to-head race between the two of them, or with the Libertarian and Green candidates tossed into the question. She also had a 2-point lead. I asked on yesterday's program, was that an outlier since some of those previous polls showed her with a much larger lead nationally? Well, now we have another poll, this one from PPP, that's a Democratic-leaning firm, out on Thursday, finding Hillary Clinton with just a 1-point lead over Donald Trump in a head-to-head matchup nationally. Now, she gets a slightly larger margin, about 4 points, when the Libertarian and Green candidates are included in that survey. But still, it's still a bit too close for comfort for me. And while I'm not necessarily a Hillary Clinton fan, I am a fan of competence, and I am an enemy of incompetence and bigotry and racism and war crimes and the idea that an unqualified fantasist, pathological liar and unrepentant grifter and con artist should be elected leader of the free world. And yes, I'm talking about Donald Trump there, in case any of you are confused. And of course, we've been discussing all year long that it was the pundits and the pollsters and the political scientists who told you for months and months that Donald Trump could never win the GOP nomination for president, even as we told you right here on this program from day one of his candidacy a little bit more than a year ago, that it was very likely to happen, that he had a very good chance of winning the nomination. So the failure of the pundits, the pollsters, and the political scientists was on display yet again over the past week following the Brexit vote in the UK, the vote to leave the European Union, demonstrating once again that many of those pundits, pollsters, and political scientists don't actually know what the hell they're talking about. Or at least when they do, sometimes voters have a very different opinion of things than those pundits, pollsters, and political scientists. That Brexit vote, that was only the latest point to touch off some panic for at least some Democrats about what appears to be, things change quickly around here these days, appears to be the final matchup for the November 2016 presidential election between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Now, while some Dems have been giddy about the prospects of Clinton, or really any Democrat, facing off against Trump, others aren't quite so confident. Here was former Obama official and green energy czar turned progressive CNN pundit Van Jones in a selfie video that he released on Facebook just after the results of the EU referendum in the UK became clear.
This is the end of the world as we know it. Okay? Please take this seriously. Crazy hard right lunatics just led the UK off a cliff. This can happen in America because it just happened in the UK. And the same bad policy and the same bad politics and the same stupid economics and the same hateful ideas that you say cannot win here just changed the entire face of Europe in one vote. There's a time to be calm, and there's a time to be rational, and there's a time to freak the hell out. This is time to freak out. Freak the F out. Run screaming around in your underwear up and down the street and tell people it happened over there and it's coming over here. ISIS is not coming over here. They do crazy videos and people do crazy things. This hate wave that just tore Europe apart, coming soon to a voting booth near you, and we need to have every single person we know doing every possible thing to stop it.
That was former Obama official Van Jones, now a CNN pundit. But for all of his panic and all the panic and all the freak out from a lot of folks after that Brexit vote, writing at The Nation last week, and I should note this article was before the Brexit vote, at The Nation, my colleague here at KPFK in Los Angeles, John Wiener, writes, "It's hard for people who follow the daily ups and downs of the candidates to accept the fact that voting in America is remarkably stable from election to election. Regardless of who the candidates are, people who voted Republican in the last election almost always vote Republican in the next one. And it's the same for Democrats. It's been true for the last five or six presidential elections, and these patterns are amplified by the Electoral College, where only a few states switch from one party to another between elections. As Wiener documents in his article at The Nation last week, headlined, "Relax, Donald Trump can't win." Really? Is Wiener sure about that? If so, what makes him so sure? Here to tell us what makes him so sure and to answer a few questions that I have about the case that he smartly offered last week at The Nation is my very good friend John Wiener. He's contributing editor at The Nation, where he hosts and produces their new Start Making Sense podcast. He teaches U.S. history at the University of California, Irvine. His latest book is How We Forgot the Cold War, A Historical Journey Across America. And most proudly, no doubt, he's the longtime host of the great 4 o'clock report on 90.7 FM KPFK, our own mighty flagship station here in Los Angeles, where his fantastic weekly program runs right after the broadcast on Wednesdays. He's had me on his show a number of times. It seems only fair I return the favor or the punishment, depending on how one looks at it. John Wiener, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Brad, it's a real pleasure to be on your show. Thank you very much. I'm a big fan.
Well, thank you. You're very kind. Now, John, we got a big holiday weekend coming up. I've been looking at these polls. I think I'm one of these people you've been talking about who follows these candidates day in and day out. I would love to relax, as your headline at The Nation urges me to. So let's go through some of your argument, some of your math, before I get down to some of my concerns about the case that you make. You write, John, the Democrats have won the popular vote in five of the last six presidential elections, other than that glitch, as you describe it, in 2000 with Bush v. Gore at the Supreme Court. Obama beat McCain in 2008 by more than 9 million votes. He beat Romney in 2012 by almost 5 million votes. For Trump to win, he needs all the people who voted for Romney, plus at least 5 million more, and they have to be in the right states, the right swing states. So you then take a look at the numbers, and what do you find that leads you to be so confident that there are just not enough votes out there for Donald Trump to actually win? Let's do your math.
Well, you're right. I have not been running up and down the streets in my underwear, as Van Jones suggested we all should. I think my goal here is to sort of take a step back, not just from the daily excitement that it's, you and I, this is our job, mm-hmm. this is what we do. But most Americans, you have to remember, aren't even following the presidential campaign now. For most Americans, the presidential campaign begins after Labor Day. And the number of people who vote in primaries is very small, a mm-hmm. Small proportion of the electorate. The number of people who vote in the Republican primary is even smaller than that. So I just want to try to get a sense of the realities of things separate from our passions, our fears, our running up and down in our underwear. My assumption here is the assumption that you learn from political science, that who are the likely voters? The mm-hmm. likely voters are the people who voted before. It's very simple. People who voted before are the ones most likely to vote again. So it's sort of a beginning assumption mm-hmm. that the people who voted for Obama, almost all of them will vote for Hillary, and the people who voted for Romney, most of them will vote for Trump, just because that's the way American politics has worked for a long time. Now, maybe it'll be different this time, might be different, but Probably not. So it's a very much of an uphill climb for Romney to find, another 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 million people, and to find them in the right places. Especially since we think it's pretty likely he's going to lose, especially some moderate Republican women. Mm-hmm. So he's got to make up those people and find millions more. I don't see where he's going to get the millions more. Where do you think he might get the millions more?
Well, and to be clear there, I think he said Romney needs to find a few millions more. I think you mean Trump needs
Trump,
to win a few
Trump
million more.
Trump needs to find more. A few million more. Yes, thank you. Trump needs to find 5 or 6 or 8 million more.
What? Now, why does he explain that? Why does he need 5 million more? Because that would be the basically get all the votes that Romney had and then another 5 million in order to close the gap. That Obama had in 2012.
My assumption is Democrats are, the people who voted Democratic in the past are going to keep voting Democratic. Mm-hmm. There are very few people who switch from one party to the other from between elections. Mm-hmm. I mean, the people who switch from McCain to Obama, number is tiny, between 2008 and 2012, and the same the other mm-hmm. direction. There are an awful lot of non-voters.
Right.
What's going to happen to the non-voters? Well, the most likely thing that's going to happen to the non-voters is that they're going to remain non-voters. Trump would like to mobilize them. Trump does claim that he's brought millions and millions of new people into the Republican primary.
That's what he says.
And it's true. It's true that he did get more primary votes than Mitt Romney did 4 years ago. But the people who looked at this closely discovered that Trump's voters in the primaries were Republican voters in the last general election. Maybe they didn't vote in the primary last time around, but they're already committed Republicans. These are not new, first-time, never-before non-voters. These are Republicans.
So even though Donald Trump got more votes than any Republican, this is the one thing that Donald Trump does tell the truth about. He did get more votes than any other Republican candidate in a primary, and he was in a field against, you know, about 17 other candidates. So that is impressive that he got a record number of votes. You're saying that all of those new primary voters aren't actually new voters per se. They're regular voters who would vote in the general election, but this time they came out for the primary, unlike in previous elections.
Exactly. These are Republicans. These aren't going to increase the Republican total. These people have already been counted as Republicans in past elections.
And what about the independence argument that Trump has been making? And there does seem to be some evidence that, these are he got a lot of people who are independents normally who may not choose between a Republican or a Democrat necessarily from year to year. And that now those independents favor him. Many of them, by the way, favored Bernie Sanders. But at least in the GOP primary, those independents were leaning strongly towards Donald Trump. Does that change the math here at all?
Here I've been influenced a lot by Joshua Holland. He has studied the independents quite a bit in the political science of the independents. What is an independent? An independent is someone who tells the pollsters or the exit polls that he or she doesn't identify as a Democrat or a Republican. But it turns out that almost all the independents, 95% of those people, vote consistently for one party or the other. They don't want to consider themselves party loyalists or party members, but when they show up in the voting booth, they have stable patterns that last for decades. The number of true independents, that is people who switch from one party to the other between presidential elections, is something like 5%. So even though they may call themselves independent, they are part of the Democratic base and part of the Republican base. And I think that they're very likely to stay that way in this November.
And now you point out in your article at The Nation, John Wiener, that Obama got only 36% of white working class votes back in 2012. And what about the turnout for the white working class? Will we see that get larger in Trump's behalf? And if so, will it be in the right states that he needs it?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought up the Brexit vote because that underlies the alienation, the disaffection of older white working class voters. The Leave vote in Britain had pretty much the same base, socioeconomic base, that the Trump vote has in the United States. Older white working class voters. Left behind by the, the race to the bottom of globalization. What's going to happen to older white working class voters in November? Well, as you pointed out, they certainly didn't vote for Obama in 2012. The reason we call them Reagan Democrats is that they became Republicans, 30 years ago. Obama's white working class vote is quite small, especially among men, And it's in the safe Democratic states. It's in New York and Illinois and California and Michigan. Mm-hmm. So even if another, I don't know, 5 or even 10% of that group voted for Trump in November, it's not going to, they're not in North Carolina and Florida and, you know, Virginia and Nevada. So I don't think that the white working class is going, has enough votes that were Democratic
right.
in 2012 to become Trump voters in 2016. Now, there's one flaw in my argument, which I'm sure you, Brad, have noticed.
One flaw?
Non-voters.
All right, go ahead.
Non-voters. What about the non-voters? What about the white working class voters who've given up on politics?
Right.
Who say politics sucks.
Right.
Politics doesn't matter.
Right.
Why vote? I think a huge... I haven't seen any figures on this,
mm-hmm.
but I'm sure that a lot of the low turnout in American politics is people who've given up on politics because the reasons the white working class has to give up on politics. And in Britain, some of those people did show up to vote to leave the EU last week. Is it possible, is it likely that those non-voters, enough of those non-voters are
right.
going to be mobilized by Trump in a way they haven't been mobilized by McCain or Romney?
Right.
And that is a big question mark. I'm not sure I have the right answer on this. I certainly can see why white working class older people wouldn't vote for Romney. He has this sort of corporate CEO aura that
mm-hmm.
Doesn't appeal to them. And I mean, Trump is a billionaire, but he's got a different, what shall we call it, vibe.
Yes, he's a corporate CEO, but he has the added advantage of being a psychopath, which seems to attract a lot of voters.
There you go.
It brings out a lot of... John, you make, in the article, you also, you answer to the argument about male and female voters and the idea that perhaps... male voters will be less inclined to vote for Hillary because they really don't seem to like her overall. The other question, and you speak to that math, but then the other question is, what about the fallout? Before I get to my direct questions on your case, what about the fallout between that bitter battle between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and those Bernie or bust voters that I hear from on the broadcast and at bradblog.com quite a bit? Are you concerned about how that could affect the race?
I think it could affect it a little. I don't think it's going to affect it a lot. I think that in after Labor Day, when the presidential campaign mm-hmm. actually begins, you're going to see Bernie is going to be campaigning for Hillary, Elizabeth Warren is going to be campaigning for Hillary, and they are going to be telling Bernie voters how bad Trump is and that we need to, we need to do the right thing.
And
they're not going to be enthusiastic, but I think they will be able to tamp down some of the Bernie or bust passions, which you and I see a lot of. I mean, a lot of that is at the Nation mm-hmm. magazine as well. In the comments on my article, you may have noticed some
yes.
of that.
Yes, I have.
Think it's going to be enough. I don't think it's going to be a very significant number of people. A lot of the Bernie or bust voters are new voters who haven't voted before, so they're not counted as having voted. But part of these 66 million who voted for Obama 4 years ago.
And there is evidence to support the idea that those Bernie Sanders supporters who had been saying, I will never vote for Hillary, I'm going to vote for Trump this fall, that they are moving quickly both away from that idea of voting for Trump even moving now to Hillary, at least according to the ABC News Washington Post poll that was out this week.
Which is a very good poll. That's an A-plus poll, according to our friends at 538.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say they like it because it agrees with them. But your friends at 538 also said Donald Trump could never become the nominee for the Republican Party. Just going to point that out.
Yeah, I was afraid you were going to bring that up.
Yeah, I thought I might. Now, but listen, let's stipulate.
Hard to pull the wool over Brad's eyes.
Keep trying, John. Keep trying.
He's on top of the game.
John, let's stipulate. Let me be very generous since I like you.
Sure.
And let's stipulate that everything in your Nation article is right. Your math is right. Because, by the way, it is good math. I think you're right in that regard. So you make an excellent case that everyone should just relax. Donald Trump cannot win. However, I'm concerned about a couple of things that math and even history don't necessarily account for. So,
okay.
John, aren't you ignoring, among other things, I got a list of three or four things here, unexpected
okay.
news between here and there. For example, how a terror attack in the U.S. in particular could affect the contours of the race, or even more, you know, bad news about Hillary's email and so forth. If something like that happens, doesn't that throw out your entire
case? It's possible.
Case?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, we did have the biggest terrorist attack since 9/11 in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
The guy said he was pledged his loyalty to ISIS, and Donald Trump picked up on that right away. Trump didn't, as you know very well, Trump didn't gain any support from that. He lost support from his reaction, congratulating himself for having predicted that ISIS would attack
mm-hmm.
within the United States. So the evidence is something worse certainly could happen, but on what's happened so far, it only helped Hillary, who looked more mature and reasonable and so on. As far as the Hillary emails, there was that report that just came out that didn't
mm-hmm.
find any criminal offenses or anything really new. So, there's, 1-2% chance Hillary might be in jail on Election Day, but
well,
probably less than that.
I don't think she'll be in jail. The Inspector General's report did find, however, that there was some violation of rules that led to what could be interpreted as a violation of the Federal Records Act. Okay, so unexpected news.
I love the Federal Records Act.
I know you do.
I'm a big supporter of freedom of information, and I think trying to hide this stuff from public release is pretty bad.
You had a case, John.
I think most voters don't vote on the basis of violations of the Federal Records Act.
And though we don't have time to get into it, you had a case personally, yourself, if I recall,
yeah.
that went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court concerning
I was an FOIA plaintiff. It is
yes.
true.
All right. Well, we'll have to talk about that another time. All right. So that the unexpected news, you say it's already come out a little bit, hasn't affected things too much. What about voter suppression? I know you interview your Nation colleague,
yeah.
Ari Berman, our friend, all the time. He literally wrote the book on that topic.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah, and you're talking about these swing states. You cite places like North Carolina and Florida and Ohio, which have a history of voter suppression, and they're doing it again this year. Doesn't that give you a pause in the case you're trying to make?
Well, it worries me. I interviewed Ari just yesterday
mm-hmm.
about Wisconsin. Wisconsin is, right up there with Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, Texas in trying to limit the Democratic voting. On the other hand, Ari thinks the Democrats will carry Wisconsin, that it's not going to work. There's some backlash and there's a lot of counter organizing.
That the voter suppression is not going to work. Is that what?
Voter suppression is not going to work enough in enough states. He thinks it's not going to work in Wisconsin. The most recent polls showed the Democrats seem to be ahead in North Carolina. They're certainly ahead in Florida. And Trump has to win a lot of states. Of course, a lot of that vote suppression is in states that are already Republican, like Texas and the rest of the and the mm-hmm. Deep South. So I worry about it. It's certainly a horrible thing. It doesn't belong in America. I don't think it's going to be. I mean, from what we can see now, and I can certainly be wrong about this, God knows, it's not going to be enough to make Trump president.
All right. Voting machines and tabulators, electronic tabulators, their failure, manipulation.
You know any good radio hosts on this topic?
I might. I know. Yeah. Your show. So the reason I mention this is because your show, you follow mine on KPFK, John. So you have to hear it, whether you like it or not. You have to hear me. nattering on about this stuff, about voting systems.
It's all shocking. The stuff that you come up with is so shocking. You know, this is I don't have to tell you, it's been the dirty little secret of American politics for a long time that we've just found out about in the last election or two.
Right, so
that, you know, all votes aren't counted, and voting is really screwed up in America. And it's not just the Republicans, it's also the Democrats.
So, no worries? Doesn't that also affect your argument to relax, Donald Trump can't win?
I am not sure that the problems with the vote count, the voting machines, the voting places, I don't think there's going to be enough of that in the swing states to make Trump president. Florida, which was, you know, the most outrageous case 8 years ago and not very good 4 years ago, this year seems to be better and seems to be pretty safe for Hillary Clinton, amazingly. I could be wrong about this, but I don't think it's going to change the vote. I mean, can we point out, how's the vote count coming for the California primary?
Well, actually, it's coming just fine. It's coming as expected. No, it took, we knew that it was going to take this long. We had a woman on the show earlier this week who was actually able to oversee the counting and ended up saving tens of thousands of presidential votes that would have been tossed out. So, but that's here where you've got sort of that's California, where you've got friendly election officials. That's a different story than what you find in a lot of places in Ohio with, a Republican governor, Republican secretary of state, same in Florida. John, you'll recall 2004, all you had to do was flip one Ohio county to take the entire state of Ohio, and thus the entire election went to George W. Bush instead of John Kerry. That could happen in Florida and or Ohio, and that could be enough. You don't need all of that. You don't need to flip that many states and that many votes in a state in order to take the entire state.
From what I understand, Florida is not going to be a problem for the Democrats in November. Ohio might be.
Mm-hmm.
But Ohio by itself isn't going to make Trump president. He needs more than Ohio.
And what could possibly go wrong in Florida? Now, I got just a minute or two here. I got two more points. You already spoke a bit to Brexit, so I'll leave that go because I would think that would give one pause for sure. But I know your article was written before that. What about the idea of Trump getting better? Rebecca Traister at New York Magazine writes about this, about a couple of these points. She said, if he begins to stabilize in his speeches, and I know it seems unlikely, but if you saw that he gave a speech last week about Hillary Clinton. He stuck to the teleprompter. It was a very good speech. It was damning. It was, of course, full of lies, but they were lies well delivered. And that speech would have gotten a lot more attention. But I think it was on one of the days, I can't remember what the breaking news was. I think the Democratic sit-in in the U.S. House sucked all the energy out of the room. But it was quite a good speech. She argues that if he does that between here and November, that could seriously change the contours of this race as well. Do you have concerns that that will happen, John Wiener?
I think people know what they think about Donald Trump already. He's got the highest negatives in the history of polling, and I don't think he's going to be able to change any significant number of minds. I would point out Nicole Wallace in the New York Times today about the GOP waits for Donald Trump to grow up. Nicole Wallace is a very interesting person. She's the one who ran the Sarah Palin disaster 8 years ago and who now sits next to Rachel Maddow on election night and is the sort of Republican voice of reason. And she was a person who was getting used to Trump as the Republican candidate, but she doesn't think, that Trump is going to become the statesman and the leader of men. She thinks what you see is what you get, and it's just going to be too hard for him to change. And besides, people already know who he is and know what they think about it.
Well, I'm worried about any case that rests on the testimony and opinion of pundits, particularly this year. But let me give you one last question. You're a historian, and then you'll be off the hook. You're doing well, John. Don't worry. You're a historian, and I hasten to add a good one. So setting aside all of your math for the moment, isn't this argument, this, hey, relax, it could never happen, isn't this thinking almost exactly the thinking that we that so many had before the B movie actor Ronald Reagan was elected president?
And, you are absolutely right to point that out. People said the lessons of history. People said in the beginning of 1980, the lesson of history is the Republicans can never win with a far-right candidate like Reagan, because we learned that from Goldwater in 1964. The Republicans have to run in the center in order to win. And this is the best thing that could happen to the Democrats. So, yeah, the pundits were wrong on that, and they understood the lessons of history incorrectly. And indeed, right down to the wire in 1980, it looked like Jimmy Carter was going to get reelected. Mm-hmm. The final polls, I think, showed him ahead by a point or two, and it was an upset. I mean, Reagan didn't win by much, but he won. So upsets are possible. Political science and history can be wrong. Mostly it isn't. 1980 was, that was a long time ago.
You write at the end of your Nation article that it's the job of the news media to make it seem that things are different this time, so that we need to tune in and keep up. And then you conclude, Hillary will win in November, and she will be sworn in as our next president on January 20. And Desi Doyen put a note by this show. We may need to replay this episode again next year, depending on how things turn out. But go check out John Wiener's article at The Nation so you can get his entire case. The headline is, Relax, Donald Trump Can't Win. John, I'm glad you're relaxing. I don't know if I'm there yet.
Well, I'm definitely not running up and down the streets in my underwear.
Well, you will be. Just wait until after Election Day. What's John, where can people find The Nation podcast, your podcast, Start Making Sense?
The Nation podcast, the best way to find it is to go to thenation.com and follow the Listen link or the Start Making Sense page.
And for the great 4 o'clock report, best to get that at iTunes or the kpfk.org archives?
Well, let's see. You may have heard there's a fund drive at KPFK, and my show and some others, too, have been preempted for special fund drive programming.
What?
So I have not been on this week or last week. But normally we are at iTunes under News and Politics, and it's called KPFK 4 o'clock Report.
Superb. You should also find him and harass him on the Twitters, where he is John Wiener 1. That's JONWIENER, the number 1. Thank you, John. Great talking to you, my friend.
Thank you, Brad.
Have a good holiday. We'll see you soon.
Okay.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with more Bradcast. Maybe I am more relaxed right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. Stay tuned. Hey, it's Brad, and you're listening to the Bradcast on Radio Sputnik. That song doesn't relax me. I don't know. It's not really working.
Really?
No, not really. Not really relaxing me, Des.
But John Wiener did a good job.
He did. He did. And he's a great guy. My thanks once again to him. Looking at, speaking of the numbers, according to the new Quinnipiac University poll that I referenced at the top of the show and I talked about on yesterday's program, that showed basically a dead heat between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. But when you dig down a little bit deeper, as Time did, looking at some of the specifics in the poll, according to the new Quinnipiac University poll, Republican nominee Donald Trump has 1%, yes, out of 100%, they note, 1% of support from black voters, according to the new Quinnipiac poll.
Look at my African-American over here. Look at him.
Yes, look at him. That was Trump, just last week, I think, at one of his rallies, spotted a black guy in the audience. The entire rally stopped so he could go, look, there he is, my African-American. By comparison, Time notes, 91% of black voters backed presumptive Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton in this poll, which showed Clinton leading 42 points to 40 over Donald Trump overall nationally. And also qualified that the returns were too close to call. That's essentially in the margin of error. That's a dead heat. Trump had 47% of the white vote support over Clinton's 30%. And as John Wiener points out in his article over at The Nation, President Obama got only 36% of the white working class vote in 2012. It looks like that number is at just 30% for Hillary Clinton. Republican nominees traditionally have not won the majority of support from African Americans, but they have done better than Trump is polling right now, better than the 1% he seems to be polling right now. Mitt Romney won 6% of the black vote in 2012. John McCain won 4%. 4% is all McCain got back in 2008. George W. Bush, on the other hand, very popular with African Americans. He got 11% of the African American vote.
So the trend is definitely down for the Republican Party.
Yes, it is going down, and now it's really down. I don't know how much lower than 1% it can possibly go. You're not going to find a lot of black people who openly support Donald Trump, said Trump supporter Pastor Mark Burns, an African-American preacher from South Carolina, according to the Daily News.
Oh, look at my African-American over here. Look at him.
Yeah, that must be him. If they openly support Donald Trump, says Burns, they'd get viciously attacked within their own community. I'm not sure about that, but anyway, that's how things are going there on the African-American front for Donald Trump. So even if Donald Trump is able to pull in more white voters than Obama was back in 2012, if that costs Clinton, maybe she'll make up for it in Hispanic votes and in black votes and so forth.
And as Wiener said, she might also pick up white working class Republican women.
Indeed. Yeah. This they note that Clinton beat Trump with in the same poll with Hispanic voters 50-33. So that is much, much better than for the Democrat than we saw in 2012. John also had mentioned Ohio and that could be close. And I've talked about this. I'm no fan of Governor John Kasich, at least no fan in the regard that he is some kind of a moderate, as the media made him out to be during the Republican primary. He's not. He's not really. But occasionally he is, and he vetoed a bill that critics said would have imposed a poll tax on voters seeking to keep polling places open due to emergencies. That's good news. This bill would have required voters seeking an extension for voting hours in county courts to post bond equal to the estimated cost of keeping polling places open. That could cost tens of thousands of dollars. If the court decided against keeping the polls open, the voter would lose the bond. So this is on election day when they have problems at the polling place and a voter...
Like a machine that goes down or long lines.
Machines, long lines. They've had problems with electronic polling books. Sometimes there are traffic accidents. Roads are shut down and they need to go to the court and say, hey, because of this problem, nobody can get to the poll. It needs to stay open. And so now they're saying that anybody who wants to go to court and ask for that has to put up a bond of tens of thousands of dollars. And if the judge says, no, that doesn't rise to the level of keeping the poll open for an extra 30 minutes, then they would lose that bond. They would lose that money. Democrats and critics, including John Kasich, but specifically Democrats, have called this a poll tax, essentially.
Yeah.
In his veto message, John Kasich agreed there is a need to create a uniform process for how this is done in county common pleas courts who consider these type of requests. But he said that the provision that eliminated a judge's discretion on whether to waive a bond or not in this case went too far. He rarely vetoes anything that comes from the Republican-controlled Ohio House and Senate. This time, this was the only, the second veto that he's issued since taking office in 2011.
Now, the Republicans, I believe, have the ability to override that veto, but Cincinnati.com, their editorial board said, who lauded Kasich for doing this, said they don't think that they're going to, because this is a, you know, just clearly a bald-faced partisan move by those Republicans. So good for John Kasich in this particular case. Democrats are very happy about it. They say that John Kasich did the right thing, that this amounted to a poll tax. And Representative Kathleen Clyde, a Democrat from Kent, said that, hey, emergencies happen and our officials need the ability to respond to ensure access to the polls. So there is some good news right there. Out of Ohio, it's hard to find much. Yes,
I'm just gobsmacked by that, by the fact that the vote suppressors, the right wing vote suppressors, are so emboldened now that is an actual bill that they would put forth. No, voter, you cannot ask for this to be open unless you pay money for it. That's nuts.
Welcome to Ohio. Welcome to 2016. It's only going to get worse. I promise you that. Barack Obama was in Canada this week. We'll talk a little bit about that in our Green News Report coming up. But since I'm trying to relax as we head into the holiday weekend, we've got Angie Coiro, by the way, sitting in for us on our next thrilling episode.
Yeah, Angie.
So you can look forward to that. I'm going to try to stand down. Obama was trying to help folks in Canada relax a little bit. He spoke in Parliament. It was kind of extraordinary. He was talking about all of the problems being faced around the world, but he was actually trying to give some encouraging words that maybe we could all use as we head towards the holiday. Let's play a little bit of Barack Obama at the Canadian Parliament.
Democracy is not easy. It's hard. Living up to our ideals can be difficult even in the best of times, and it can be harder when the future seems uncertain or when, in response to legitimate fears and frustrations, there are those who offer a politics of us versus them, a politics that scapegoats others, the immigrant, the refugee, someone who seems different than us. We have to call this mentality what it is, a threat to the values that we profess, the values we seek to defend. It's because we respect all people that the world looks to us as an example. Our Muslim friends and neighbors who run businesses and serve in our governments and in our armed forces and are friends with our children and play on our sports teams. We've got to stand up against the slander and the hate leveled against those who look or worship differently. That's our obligation. That's who we are. That's what makes America special. That's what makes Canada special. Here in Canada.
Obama at the Canadian Parliament, but after he finished speaking, and credit to Rachel Maddow on MSNBC for noticing what happened here, this rather extraordinary moment. See if you can hear it. See if you can hear the reception he got and what they started chanting inside the Canadian Parliament. Hey, this is Brad. Do you enjoy your non-corporatized, commercial-free broadcast? Yeah, me too. But we need your help to stay that way. Please consider supporting the investigative blogging, broadcasting, and muckraking that we do here on the Bradcast and the Green News Report and bradblog.com with a donation. It's easy. Stop by bradblog.com/donate and drop a few dollars in the tip jar. You can make a one-time contribution or an automatic monthly donation of any amount you like. It's easy. It'll take you about 60 seconds, and you'll help me and Desi stay on the air to continue our troublemaking and muckraking without the corporate influence of anyone. Got it? Thanks. Stop by bradblog.com/donate to help us out today. That's the Canadian Parliament chanting, 4 more years, 4 more years.
Remarkable.
What does that say about how much they apparently like him? Actually, what does that say about what they think of Donald Trump? And what does it say about what they think of Hillary Clinton if they want Barack Obama to stay in for 4 more years? And by the way, that's the guy who just rejected their pipeline up there, the Keystone XL pipeline. Go figure. Speaking of which, a quick break, and we're back with our latest Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't go away. Hey, this is Brad, and you're listening to the Bradcast on Radio Sputnik.
Take it easy, take it easy.
Yeah, that's better.
Don't let the sound of your own wheels drive you crazy.
I try.
Lighten up while you still can.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Thank you, Desi. That works.
Yeah, it's a pretty good song.
That's a little bit more relaxing. All right. Well, let's see if that stays the case as we get to our latest Green News Report.
An ambitious and enduring North American climate, clean energy, and environment partnership.
U.S., Canada, and Mexico sign Clean Energy Pact.
Americans take it for granted that the water flowing from their drinking water taps is clean and safe.
New report finds millions of Americans may be exposed to lead in drinking water. Germany bans fracking. Plus, LED streetlights are keeping the American Medical Association up at night.
Really? All of those stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I think it's across the board known that the EPA has become an out-of-control agency.
Also, is our children learning? This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, just a quick reminder before we get to the 4th of July holiday. Fingers crossed out here in California, where it remains bone dry, that fireworks don't start a whole new round of wildfires across this state.
Yes, that would be bad.
Yeah, you think? Somehow I feel like our next Green News Report is writing itself already. That said, what do you have for us in today's Green News Report?
Well, first, an estimated 18 million people in the United States are potentially exposed to dangerous lead levels in U.S. drinking water. That's according to a new report from the Natural Resources Defense Council, whose analysis of the Environmental Protection Agency's own records found that more than 5,000 municipal water systems are not in compliance with federal drinking water standards. It's important to note that the report does not say all 18 million people have been exposed to excessive lead. They just say that their water supplies recorded violations. NRDC found the EPA did not act on nearly 90% of those reported cases, which means they're potentially missing problems with inadequate testing or inadequate water treatment measures. According to NRDC's Eric Olson, the report demonstrates the need for a national plan to repair our water systems.
Providing safe drinking water to citizens is a fundamental government service. And, you know, if you're not doing that, you're not doing your job. And unfortunately, what we've found is that unsafe drinking water is a national problem.
And in a telling coincidence, the day after the report's release, a House of Representatives office building in Washington, D.C. had its tap water shut off because of high levels of lead contamination. Meanwhile, in Canada, President Obama has signed a major joint clean energy agreement with Canada and Mexico. At a joint press conference with all three North American leaders, Obama said the partnership would ensure the nations of North America are leaders in the fight against climate change.
We're announcing a new goal across our continents of generating 50% of our electricity with clean power by 2025, which is a bold goal, but is an imminently achievable goal.
That goal of 50% clean energy in 10 years is across the entire continent and would be met in part through new energy efficiency standards and new cross-border electricity transmission lines between the nations. Those will generate hundreds of thousands of jobs and allow Canada, with its abundance of clean hydroelectric power, to export clean electricity to the U.S. and Mexico.
Yeah, it'll also allow tightrope walking illegal immigrants to walk right across those power lines.
Okay, well, maybe so, but exporting clean electricity is far better than Canada exporting its dirty tar sands oil.
Okay, good point.
Big Oil's lobbying group, the American Petroleum Institute, is very not happy about the growing influence of the climate action movement to leave fossil fuels in the ground. In an exclusive report, Politico says that the American Petroleum Institute has now formed an internal task force to rethink their marketing and PR campaigns in order to get their anti-climate science message out there and block any momentum in the next Congress toward a price on carbon emissions.
Oh, we'd hate to see that.
Germany has banned fracking, ending a years-long dispute over the controversial natural gas drilling technique. The Guardian reports that the German legislature passed the fracking ban after the oil and gas industry, tired of waiting for new regulations, announced last week they would push ahead with fracking projects that had been on hold. So the German assembly banned it altogether.
Oh, Hillary Clinton's not going to be happy.
Finally, a wave of American cities are switching their streetlights to super efficient LED bulbs. While LEDs are champs at saving money and energy, the American Medical Association now says that the most commonly used bright white LED streetlights are too harsh and can actually interfere with night vision. Plus, the AMA warns the bright lights may be messing with Americans' sleep-wake cycles. So the AMA says proper design of new technologies is crucial and recommends cities instead opt for LED bulbs with a yellowish color for nighttime street lighting.
Yes, please. That sounds good. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. You can even look at it at night on your really brightly lit mobile phone. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night.
Well done, Desi Doyen.
Thank you
very much to our producer, Desi Doyen, to my guest today, John Wiener of The Nation and KPFK 90.7 FM here in Los Angeles. Thank you very much. If you missed any portion of today's broadcast, you can always download it for free at bradblog.com or over on the iTunes. You can drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And you can find and follow me on the Facebooks and the Twitters at The Brad Blog, though I hope to be not paying much attention to them over the next couple of days. Angie Coiro will be in for us on our next thrilling episode. I hope that all of you out there will have a safe, happy, and healthy July 4th Independence Day weekend. For everyone around the world who doesn't celebrate, please pardon us while we blow stuff up in this country without actually trying to hurt anyone for a change. All right, until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.